Carnies work outside. They're the ones on the midway at state fairs in the booths with, you know, the stuffed teddy bears hanging from the poles and the neon monkeys. And they're trying to get you to play one of those games where, you know, you're trying to put a basketball through an oval hoop or ring toss onto a bottle where the mouth is too big. They're trying to scam you out of your money. Anyway, this isn't a story about carnies and people working on the midway and rigged games. This is a story about traveling salespeople. Pitchmen.
This is Arrivals. Stories of migration, transformation, and change. The program that explores what we do when what we've done is a thing of the past. Today, we're taking you backstage, on the road, inside the life and mind of a traveling salesperson.
But who has the time to spend in a spa? Plus, the sauna experience can be expensive. Not anymore! Introducing the revolutionary Sauna Pants, the at-home sauna experience that you can enjoy when you want to.
We worked indoors, which was sort of a mark of prestige. We still traveled around the country and went to the state fairs, although I'm from Canada, so it was not state fair. I don't even know what we call them, just the fairs. The CNE, the PNE, the home shows, the craft fairs. And we would be indoors on a little stage with a little microphone. And we'd be selling you things from the As Seen on TV infomercials.
Just relax in the privacy of your own home. Enjoy your sauna just once and it pays for itself. Order now and just wrap and relax.
We sold cleaning products, gardening tools, clothes hangers, any of those like new kids' toys on the market. Markers, you know, those magic markers that change color when you draw over them with some special pen. It's hard to imagine now going to a fair or a state fair and being amazed by some markers that someone is coloring on. But to be honest, back then, you couldn't get something at Toys R Us or Amazon or on the internet. A lot of people sort of see it as you're doing people a service. They're traveling around the country. They're going to the places where people can't get these sorts of things. And we're bringing them the new products. But now, I mean, you know, there's all these booths and stage and people on them lining up and down the halls, selling, you know, a clip to hold your bra straps together or... what else is there? Like one of those garlic grinders that, you know, I think it's honestly, it's just made out of cheap plastic that breaks and they charge you $20 for it. I think it's lost a bit of the prestige from back in the day. My dad knows all about that.
I've always been a show marketer. First show I ever worked was with the CNE in 1973.
He's talking about the Canadian National Exhibition. It's a big show every year at the end of August, at the end of the summer in Toronto. You know, hundreds of thousands of people come, and it's really exciting. He sold encyclopedias.
Long, long, long before you were born, when I was but a child.
Yeah.
I needed a job. I needed a job, and I seem to remember... It was a time when, you know, unemployment was high, jobs were hard to get, and I was young and innocent, and I really mean, you know, young and naive. And I saw an ad in the newspaper, and it was a big, huge ad, and it said, publisher requires experienced salespeople to represent their published, world-renowned publishing products. And I thought, you know, as you do, because of your own ego, you thought, well, that sounds like me, you know. That's publishing. I could get into publishing. I could represent world-renowned products. That sounds like my little niche.
Right. The prestige of working in publishing.
All of those companies have gone out of business. They don't exist anymore as a sales organization because nobody would... Why would you buy information that you can Google for free? And you can literally get everything that's in the Britannica for free at your fingertips. And it killed the business. Overnight, it killed the business. There was a whole industry of thousands of people lost their income, lost their business. And they all went into doing things like selling loppers and pruners.
That's what he sells now. Pruners. They're gardening tools. I think it's been hard for him adjusting to the banality of being a salesperson. He started out small. He was he was an encyclopedia salesperson, and then he grew his own company. My dad and my mom, they got together. They were doing different types of marketing and sales, and now he goes into his backyard and he cuts down branches from the trees and he brings them with them and sets them on his table, and as people pass by, he says, "Hi, have you seen these pruners before? Do you want to come check them out?" And then he starts his whole pitch. Granted, he's never actually used a pruner a day in his life. I did ask him that once. I remember. So do you use these products? Of course, he tells the people and them on the at the shows. Absolutely. But it's the only pruner I'll use. But I mean, he had a gardener when I was young.
I never know, it's the truth, I never know whether it was the worst or the best thing that ever happened to me. Because I turned out to be quite successful at it, right? 90%, 99% of the people that go through those mass hirings for commission sales jobs, they fall off and fall by the wayside in a week. I had the misfortune to sell a few sets of books. I made about $500 or $600, which was unbelievable at the time. And I was hooked. And that was it.
I grew up around Canada's finest pitchmen. Although the pool wasn't really that big. So I probably just grew up around pitchmen. I remember racing down the aisles of home shows past that year's newest steam mop or garlic grinder, fancy slicer and dicer. And the pitchmen would all be on their little stages with the slanted mirrors behind them, and their hands are flying across the cutting board, and they're speaking a mile a minute into their wireless microphones, and everyone's laughing. I loved it. I thought it was amazing. It was like little mini shows. I couldn't wait for the chance to get up on stage and perform in front of the public, while mopping up obscene amounts of Diet Coke with the ShamWow.
Hi, it's Vince with ShamWow. You'll be saying wow every time you use this towel. It's like a chamois, it's like a towel, it's like a sponge. You wring it out, you wash it in the washing machine.
I can't live without it. I just love it.
Oh my gosh, I don't even buy paper towels anymore.
If you're gonna wash your cars or any kind of vehicle, you'd be out of your mind not to own one of these.
All I can say is ShamWow.
That sounds precious now. I was just a kid, though. Forgive me. When I got older, I wanted a stage. I wanted a microphone. I wanted people to laugh at me as I was telling jokes up there. I think I was like 15. I started out selling children's stuff. My first product was Ideal Blocks for $20. It was a set of like maybe, you know, 7 or 8 blocks. And I remember telling people, you know, these are designed by a mathematician. They've got beveled edges. And at the time, I don't think I knew what the word beveled was. I think I had to look it up for this. And people would say, oh my God, did you know? Are you the mathematician? Do you know that? I'm like, no, like we buy them from a massive factory in China. But sure, whatever. I think I learned how to lie at an early age. It was white lies, you know, you're selling an idea. It's not a product, it's an idea. And before iPods and MP3s became a thing, I sold these personalized kids' CDs. I'd yell out, "What's the name of the youngest child you know?" And, I mean, normally people would just look confused as I yelled at them from my booth. But sometimes they would yell back, "Oh, Taylor, Taylor's my youngest kid. What do you mean? What are you going to do?"
"Wake up, Taylor. It's a brand new day."
They think I'm going to do like a reading or tell them the what the name means, but this music, it still haunts my dreams.
It's time to get up, time to wake up, it's time to get up, Taylor. Gotta get up, hey, you gotta wake up, God gave us a brand new day. Throw open.
I got stuck on the dryer balls booth for a while. They're these two blue balls with spikes on them. They're used to fluff up your clothes in the dryer. I thought it was just a total gimmick. But the funny thing was, little old ladies would come by and they would always say, oh, yeah, I put a tennis ball in there when I put in my duvets, or I put a running shoe. It helps keep it fluffed up. So I guess there's reason behind it. But at the time, I remember thinking, it's $20 for two plastic blue balls that for sure cost less than $1 to make. And we like bought them in mass amounts. And as a young teenager, I would stand on this little stage and I would yell out to people walking past, hi, have you seen my amazing blue balls yet? Or my amazing dryer balls yet? And the number of gross blue ball jokes from old men walking by. But to be honest, I think most of them, they're not creative enough to really think of a good joke. So a lot of the time I would just be standing there holding out these balls in their face, and they slack-jawed would stare at me, and then you could see the wheels turning in their head as they're trying to think of a joke, and then they'd, you know, nudge their friend in the side and say, hey, look at this. Do you need some blue balls? God gave us a brand new day. It's not really a job for everyone. But I grew up watching The Best Pitchman. I remember Doodad on stage slaying the audience with his one-liners.
Have you ever in your life, young lady, seen glasses so clean, so bright, you can take a hanky and you can pass it right through the lens? Look at that. It's unusually clean. Anyways, no more steaming. You get no more fogging. You get no more frosting. Now, you know, this happens to people who wear glasses when you go inside and outside in the winter. That happens when you're opening the oven door, when you're eating a hot bowl of soup, or when you're necking in torrid lust and passion with the person of your dreams. That's right.
Okay, so maybe he wasn't the funniest guy in the world, but I was a kid, and he made really good money. He bragged about it all the time. He was basically celebrity at the Canadian National Exhibition. Like Billy Mays.
Hi, Billy Mays here for OxiClean, the stain specialist. Powered by the air you breathe, activated by the water that you and I drink. It's Mother Nature approved, then it's safe on your colored fabrics. Use it on carpets. OxiClean seeks out organic stains.
Like Billy Mays stains, before OxiClean, cocaine padding, took him down. Billy Mays was supposed to be my future. When I finally got on stage at the shows, I was a little nervous. I'd never actually used any of the products I was selling. Keep that in mind next time you're trying to buy something from someone on the street and you have technical questions for them. I was worried someone might realize that this teenager had never touched an iron before, let alone pressed her husband's suit. But that line was always supposed to be hypothetical. I mean, customers couldn't have actually thought that I was married. I was a kid. But it became second nature to me. You know, I'd be standing there on my little stage. Hi, have you seen my amazing iron yet? It's an upright steamer as well as a flat iron. The idea is, if you've only got one shirt to do and you don't want to drag out the entire ironing board, leave it on the hanger. A couple quick bursts of steam knocks the wrinkles right out of there. Quick and easy to do. It works on absolutely every type of material. And I would go on and on and on. I was just like a robot on repeat.
We iron in America with high heat and pressing things.
That's right, yeah.
But steam is what makes the wrinkles just evaporate.
Yes.
With a pressurized boiler, which is different than any other piece of equipment that we've ever had at QVC, 75,000 people have bought this machine from us. Our relationship with Genevieve and the company she represents, Eurosteam, has built to the point where...
You know what you shouldn't try with a regular iron? Sorry, that's an infomercial. That's from one of my coworkers who did that as an infomercial. But you know what she's saying? That you shouldn't put a regular iron on? You shouldn't iron a balloon. That was the part of the pitch that was awe-inspiring. I'd hold up a blown-up balloon, and I'd press the bottom of the iron to it, and everyone would jump back. Because they thought, you know, I'm about to like pop a balloon right in front of them. Nobody likes that. And then they'd laugh when the balloon didn't pop. To be honest, I don't think the customers ever really questioned what I was saying. I was good. I made so much money. I could say whatever I wanted and people would believe me. I was strutting up and down those aisles like I owned the place. I wore trashy, attention-grabbing clothes. All of my skirts were fluorescent with sequins on them for two reasons. One, my favorite bit during the sales pitch was lifting my skirt onto the ironing board and saying, "See, it won't even melt these plastic sequins," right after I've tried to pop the balloon. And two, I was a teenager with zero fashion sense. My carny family. I think sales will eventually drive you mad, though. At some point, you don't realize it, but you'll do anything to seal the deal. Especially when the deal is $1,000 a day. I had never seen that much money before. I remember telling customers when I was young, "Oh, this is the only iron I ever use." And people would lean in and say, "What about rayon?" I'd laugh and say, "Don't worry about it. Oh my God, I never send my rayon sheets to the cleaners anymore. I'm saving so much money. Did you know you can clean anything in cold water? It's heat that ruins the fabric. Just put it in the cold water and then, you know, use the steamer to blast the wrinkles right out of there." I'd never owned a rayon shirt. I still don't really know what rayon is. I couldn't pick it out of a lineup. The year that I started to question it, I think, was the year that my coworkers and I realized that our boss had switched the iron on us without telling us. The iron that we sold was made in Italy. It was called the Eurosteam. And we were unloading the truck with, you know, hundreds and hundreds of irons into the show. And we were setting up our booth and getting the speaker and the microphone and everything to work. And someone picked up the iron and looked on the bottom of it and said, "Made in the PRC. And I was like, "PRC? What part of Italy is that?" And I remember someone said, "People's Republic of China." But yeah, the carny lifestyle. You'd wake up, get in the truck, go to another small town or city. You never really actually got to see the country. I mostly just saw the inside of motels and the insides of convention centers. I thought I'd made it when I was asked to go to London, England to sell the Eurosteam. No more little crappy towns, no more motels on the side of the highway, no more sharing a room with uneducated carnies. I was going to Europe. And I was going to make pounds sterling. I couldn't wait to see the piles of money I was going to bring in. It was a month-long show, too. 30 days of, "Hi, have you seen my amazing iron yet? It's an upright steamer as well as a flat iron. It'll never burn, scorch, or melt anything, even on rayon." My booth was crammed between a nail art booth and lotions from the Dead Sea. Like, it's from Israel, and it's like, you know, salts from the Dead Sea, and those people are so intense. They literally walk out into the aisle and they grab you by the hand and they start saying, "Oh, look at your skin. It's all cracked and dry. You've got to try this lotion." Little did I know they were all snorting speed under their tables. That's why they were so intense. I had no friends there. For 30 days straight, I pried open wallets with my slick sales pitch. But I wasn't making that much money. All of a sudden, I realized that, you know, it's not always a guarantee. And at night, I was too tired to do anything. I'd walk back to my crappy little hotel room with the shared bathroom and no kitchen. I'd eat some cold cuts, try to find a channel on TV that wasn't all static. I remember my neighbor was always having sex until she was taken away in an ambulance one night. I never got to meet her. It was quieter after that. I didn't have a computer or Wi-Fi. I'd walk to the nearest internet cafe to email and catch up on friends. I missed regular people. I guess the indicators were there. I should have seen them as a kid. Remember that terrible kids' music? "Wake up, Taylor."
Tell me, Taylor, do you know the magic words?
My family decided to invest in the software to burn those kids' CDs. I didn't realize, however, that my parents spent $16,000 on the software. I was the only one that knew how to work computers in the family. We all drove down to a small town somewhere in southern Ontario, stayed in some shitty small one-room motel. My parents were beginning their not-so-slow descent into divorce. And the three of us, we set up the booth in some barn-like community center. That irritating music was the soundtrack for the week, and we were all on edge. We were all hoping, I guess, for that $16,000 software to pay off. My mom was telling me that, you know, this was what, we were going to make it big. Instead of making a 20% commission, we would keep all of the profits. We'd sell a CD for $20, and it only cost us 5 cents to burn. You know, if you sold a certain number to divide it down so that $16,000 was 5 cents a CD. That 16 grand was supposed to multiply. We were going to be rolling in it. The show wasn't exactly lucrative. Every sale started to feel desperate. And I'm sure the customers could tell. One day we were pitching this woman and playing her the terrible music when a friend of hers walked up and interrupted. They hugged, like, oh, hi, how are you? Oh, my God, did you hear that so-and-so and blah, blah, blah? And they just, you know, turned and walked away from the booth. My dad went ballistic. He ran down the aisle after them and he lectured them on show etiquette, told them how rude it was to interrupt a sale. We were talking to them. We were at a point of sale. This is a business that you just walked into, and how rude that you could possibly do that. We didn't work together as a family after that. My parents broke up, and we all went solo. I think I transferred my own dislike for shows onto my dad. We didn't talk a lot for a long time after that. I hated myself. I hated the work. I felt like I had no reason to exist. What was the point of making all this money? It's just one long cyclical struggle. You know, get up. You don't know what city you're in. You walk into a convention center that looks the same as every other convention center on the planet. Under the fluorescent lights, and you set up your booth, and the people start walking in, and your job all day long is to convince them to open up their wallet and give you some money. And you work 12-hour days. Long, long days. Usually for like 9 or 18 days straight. That one in England was 30 days. And I'd get home, oh, my body would ache. And I wouldn't have spoken to anyone about anything interesting all day long. All I would have said is on repeat. Hi, have you seen my amazing iron yet? Let me show you how great it is. It doesn't work. It works on absolutely every type of material. It'll never burn anything. It's so crazy good. I haven't worked a show in years. Recently, I went back and I sat down with my dad. I wanted to ask him how the pruners are selling.
What's the worst part of the shows?
The boredom of it sometimes. The sheer boredom. You know, I'm sitting here for 12 hours a day. Under normal circumstances, I'm maybe working. There are busy times and you're really into it and you're working hard and you're taking money and it's all hot and heavy and good. But a lot of the time, you're just sitting here, you know, nothing happens for the first 2 or 3 hours. Nothing happens for the last couple of hours. Sometimes nothing happens in between.
I kept pushing him. I wanted to know, does he have the same disdain for the business that I do? Does he hate that every day he gets in his car and drives down to, you know, some fair and sets up his booth and starts cutting branches up with his loppers and his brooms?
I have fun with it and I have, you know, I enjoy it, but I am aware that it's a lot, you know, there are drawbacks.
But there's no question I'll leave this show and go, oh, I can't do that again. You know. But what happens, I've been told it's like a woman after she gives birth. If she remembered the pain, she'd never do it again, right? But 6 months later, you've forgotten.
I like that you just compared selling things at a show
no,
to a woman giving
no,
birth.
No, doing a 20-day grind is a rough go, let me tell you. But what I compare it to is that 6 months after it's over, I've completely forgotten how lousy I felt when I was doing it. And all I remember is that I made good money. And then, you know, a couple of months later, the contract comes in the mail. And the next thing I know, I'm signing it and sending it in because I've completely forgotten what it's like to have to go through and do it again. But I do. At the end of every 10 or 15 or 20-day show, I go, oh, never again.
But the more I talked to my dad about shows and being a salesperson, the more I realized I don't think I was listening. Or at least, I was just hearing what I wanted to hear. The negatives, the exhaustion, the loneliness. But he raised a family during that. Maybe it wasn't conventional. But he did it. I'm glad he did it. I'm glad I did it too.
Special thanks to Sarah Barrett, who wrote and co-produced this episode with us. Find out more about her work and our show at our website, arrvls.com. And if you like what you hear, leave us a review on iTunes, join our special features subscription service through the Acast app, or just write to me at arrivalshow@gmail.com. I'd love to hear from you. Arrivals is a proud and founding member of The Herd, an audio collective of storytelling producers from across North America. Find out more at theherdradio.com. That's the H-E-A-R-D radio.com. I'm Jonathan Hirsch. Thank you for listening. And until we meet again, may you wind up where you need to be.
Brush Buddies Singing Toothbrush, featuring Justin Bieber, includes four of his hit singles. Time flies when you're having fun and enjoying your favorite hits from Justin Bieber while you brush. We'll have you brushing your teeth for the dentist recommended 2 minutes before you know it. The Brush Buddies Singing Toothbrush, featuring Justin Bieber. Get your Bieber smile today.